Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. For our show, I'll be chatting with Valerie Fletcher from the Institute for Human-Centered Design. So tell me a little bit about the Institute for Human-Centered Design.
Sure, Cam. Thank you. The Institute for Human-Centered Design was founded in 1978, originally called Adaptive Environment, and we changed our name on our 30th anniversary to reflect a more expansive mission than people were interpreting from our name or original. Our work is a mix of everything from local to national to global. But our focus is always on issues of accessibility and universal or inclusive design.
So, what are the most prevalent issues concerning accessible design?
We are very committed to looking at issues of human experience. So, in our point of view, we actually are looking at design holistically. Certainly the physical environment has gotten the most attention, but our lives in the 21st century really need to be looking at the physical environment, the information environment, communication environment, policy, and attitude, or social environment. And that follows the World Health Organization definition of disability circa 2001, which talked about disability as a contextual experience that we can expect more functional limitation today because we live so much longer and survive so much more, but we can create environments of all kinds that not only remove barriers, but facilitate performance and full participation and good experience.
So, can you give me some examples of ways in which you work on modifications for people with disabilities?
One of the things that we do a lot is work in cultural institutions. Let me give an example from there, and then I'll offer another from higher ed. But in cultural institutions today, there's been a subtle shift in our expectation that those experiences are partly about the physical environment and partly about, almost inevitably, a digital experience will be part of a cultural experience. We're buying our tickets online, we're checking an exhibit at the museum and seeing if there's a download, there may be an app to download. And when we get there, we're going to possibly plan a day in which we are going to, say, a museum. We're going to visit the museum, but we're also going to meet a friend for lunch. We're going to pick up a birthday present in the museum store. So we presume that it's that kind of experience for them. And we've got to be thinking about all aspects of that so that someone can plan to have a great experience equal to what anyone would have in that cultural experience. So people have to anticipate that the website is usable by anyone, that you've anticipated that, for instance, people with low vision might actually want to download a large print map before they go. Thinking about exhibits in many institutions today are going to have they're going to have interactive screens. There's going to be almost inevitably some kind of video, and all of that has to anticipate the ordinary diversity of human ability today and plan for it. So that it's a seamless experience. It doesn't require, if I'm a person with a disability, I go in this entrance or I go on the third Tuesday of each month to get what I need. That's a good example. That's the kind of example we look at in the cultural sector. In higher ed, very similar issues. We do a great deal of work in higher ed, where, again, it's a quest for a seamless, equal experience of everything that a college or university has to offer for any student with any kind of disability. And to really be planning for that in everything, physical environment, in the increasing breadth of digital experiences, including digital classes, where a lot of people are now getting some of their credit.
So, in your time working in universal design, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
That's a really a valuable question, Cam. One of the biggest frustrations has been that people think universal design is just basic accessibility, only perhaps more attractive, but it's got aesthetic concerns also. We think it's much more fundamental than that, that it's a much bigger set of ideas. We see a real bridge between issues of accessibility with the concept underlying most civil and human rights for people with disabilities that basically says our goal is an integrated setting, not a special setting and a separate setting, but an integrated setting. So that mandate, which I think underlies so much of the CRPD and the American laws like 504 and ADA, is sometimes forgotten in favor of standards. But that integrated setting leads us to universal design, where we've really anticipated a much broader set of human experiences beyond what the standards speak to, which almost inevitably speaks primarily to issues of accommodating wheeled mobility and a little bit people who are literally blind and need braille. Ideally, that's one challenge. Second challenge that I think is the big challenge of the moment and of the next few years is really building a much richer set of information about human experience of people with functional limitations about whom we don't know very much about what works. Let me give you an example. There's a large number of people who have neuropathy in their feet for all kinds of reasons, but they don't use a chair, or they don't use a scooter most commonly, but they may use it occasionally. But we know very little about the design of indoor or outdoor materials or the design of stairs that are responsive to people who have no sensation in their feet. And that's a kind of data example of something that we feel really needs to inform universal design. We've got to gather that data. We've got to gather it from real people sharing their own experiences and build that up so that we can see patterns of what works. What are the characteristics of the successful design that we want to be able to train designers to do and give designers that knowledge, that data about real human experience that is beyond just concepts. Because the principles of universal design are very valuable, but they aren't adequate for innovation in design.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with accessible design, has there been any one success moment that stands out for you?
I think for us, the worst and unintended consequence that's happened, particularly in our experience in the United States, because we've had requirements on accessibility for a very long time, going back to the 70s, the worst thing that can happen is that people just think about it in the same way they think about the plumbing code or the electrical code. They forget the civil rights and the human rights aspects of it. And they just want to know, what do I have to do? You know, kind of, what can I get away with? the real success is when people understand this is about all of us, not about some small group of people who are fundamentally different from most people. This is increasingly about the human condition. And when people suddenly have that aha moment, extraordinary things are possible. Suddenly the whole institutional culture changes, and everybody's invested in thinking differently. That's the thrill of accessibility that also certainly applies to universal design. But accessibility, too, it's got to be about something more than just tell me what I have to do, which is always too narrow and unsuccessful.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Human-centered design. Sounds simple, but when you take into consideration all the needs out there, things such as vision impairments, hearing impairments, if you take the time to consider that we all have needs, but we all have strengths and potentials, and more than that, the right to access becomes so much more meaningful when an organization takes the time to consider what we can really do to stand by these individuals. For who knows what a person can achieve when given the right tools. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the number 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Truth is, in disability life, it is a matter of recognizing one's own strengths and not putting up unnecessary barriers. Anyone can say, this looks too hard, or I don't want to try this. But it's groups like the Institute that are saying, I believe we can achieve. I believe we should achieve. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Green Bean Cafe is your independent cafe specializing in fair trade, organic, and premium coffee products. Along with our delicious coffee, we serve other great food and drinks like tea, fresh baked goods, sandwiches, and more. We have two locations to serve you better. Visit us at the lower level of 2320 Wyandotte Street, across from the new engineering building, or the third floor at 300 Willette Avenue's Windsor Star Building. Get hours and more info at www.greenbeancoffee.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Valerie Fletcher from the Institute for Human-Centered Design. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Edie Forsyth from Accessibility Experts. So tell me a little bit about Accessibility Experts.
Well, we're consultants and trainers on the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, and we write policies and multi-year plans. And then we provide training on the legislation and also on how to create accessible documents.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the processes used for this?
So, normally we go into an organization and look at what they've done so far, because there's all kinds of standards that they have to comply with for the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. So, the first one is the customer service standard, and that's the way we provide goods and services to people with disabilities, and you have to have policies and procedures and staff training and whatnot on it. And then they have to comply with the Integrated Accessibility Standards Regulation. So that's the Employment Standard, the Information and Communication Standard, the Transportation Standard, and Public Spaces. We just kind of first take a general look at what they have, and then we help them and guide them through making sure they're in compliance with the legislation. So we basically travel across the province of Ontario, and we deal with government, public, and private sector. And Tim Hortons, Sobe, Samsung, Exhibition Place, and quite a few municipalities and school boards are our clients.
So
we're also the accessibility consultant for Elections Ontario, and were instrumental in getting Ontario to have accessible voting for the first time 2 years ago. And we're also the trainers for ANCTO, the Association of Managers, Clerks, and Treasurers of Ontario. We've got lots of experience, and we love what we do, and we're making a big change and an impact, and that's pretty exciting.
So, can you tell me what some of the most common barriers are for a person with a disability?
I think the most common barrier is the lack of education of people. People just don't understand about the various disabilities and the fact that they are people. And that's why, you know, the government has really done a really good job of implementing the standards. They started off with the customer service standards, and that was kind of understanding all the various disabilities, but most importantly, understanding that people with disabilities are people. So they're all individuals, and that's why we practice that first-person language, that it's a person with a disability, a person with epilepsy, and then treating them with dignity and respect, and asking them, how may I help you? And then allowing that person to tell you what it is that they need to be assisted with. And I think that's really exciting. And now that all the other standards have been released, we're going to see greater change come forward. People are starting to be educated. Now we're going to move into the other sectors.
So when you say the other sectors...
The Information and Communication Standard is about organizations working towards making their websites accessible so that anybody can go on there and find information using a screen reader or an assistive device. And also providing alternative formats with public materials. So that's kind of all about making sure the documents we create, like whether it's brochures or business cards or flyers or letters or whatnot, that we're using good color contrast, that we're using the clear print guidelines, we're using proper fonts like a sans serif font, black and white is the easiest to read, using upper and lower case instead of all caps, and applying the clear writing principles so that we're keeping things short and concise. And then we apply the formatting to it so that we've got styles and we're using headings so that somebody with an assistive device can maneuver through that document. So that's going to help a lot with printed material and electronic copies. And then the employment standard is all about hiring people with disabilities and providing the necessary tools and support throughout their life cycle of their career. And that doesn't have to be real complicated either. It could be something as simple as providing a large screen for somebody that has poor vision. Then we've got the transportation standard, and that's going to make it easier for people to travel. So buses, trains, streetcars, ferries, taxis, all of them are going to be more accessible. A lot of the cities have already converted all their local buses to be accessible. And that's going to really help people to get around in their community. And then there's the public spaces standard, and so that's outdoor public eating spaces and parks and recreation and trails and beach access routes. Eventually those will become accessible when they're built also. And that's going to be really helpful for people with disabilities because they need the kind of connection with nature that all of us so enjoy. So we're going to see a lot of change there.
So, in your time working with accessibility, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
I haven't had a lot of challenges. I'm seeing people really accepting all of this. They know it's the right thing to do, and that we have to make change. And we're starting to see a lot of change. Now, business sector, I mean, it's hard on them, especially small businesses. They can't be expected to put in a ramp and an accessible washroom and an elevator and so on because they don't have the funds to be able to do it. So I think that's why the government decided to kind of back off a little bit on the built environment standard, and we're going to see the new building code come out, and it'll be on a new build forward basis so that, you know, they can slowly make changes when they build a new building instead of their existing one because they don't have the dollars to do it. But I think the private sector, like the businesses, things don't have to cost a lot of money to make change or make things accessible. It can be as easy as, well, you can't get into my building because it's not accessible, but I do have everything available online. Or we're a drugstore. We'll deliver those items to you if you like. Or if it's a hairdresser, we could come to your home later on this afternoon and do your hair there. Would that work for you? It's just a matter of thinking differently in the way that we provide our services. It could be as simple as putting a chair outside the change room so that if somebody brought an elderly parent with them, they could sit down. It's about making sure price tags are legible and readable. So if we're putting a red price tag and then putting writing on top that's also dark, it's difficult to read. So using effective color contrast and clear signage is also helpful.
So to look at the reverse side of things,
mm-hmm.
in your time with accessibility, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
My greatest success is when I walk out of a room after I've done a training session and I have everybody in agreement that, yes, we need to change things because it does affect all of us on a personal level. I usually do something where I go around the room and I ask people, after I've gone through the list of all the different disabilities, I ask everyone in the room if they know anybody that has a disability, whether it be a parent or a friend or a neighbor or a colleague or one of their own family members or themselves, and everybody ends up raising their hand. And so I get it to switch around that this is personal, this is about people we know. Every one of us knows a person with a disability. So to have change is huge because it impacts all of us on a personal level. And then we're an aging population on top of it. I mean, we're all aging. And when we look at the baby boomers, those born between the years 1946 to 1964, once they turn 65, one in two of them will have a disability. So that's a huge impact. And we're all aging. We're all starting to lose our eyesight and losing our hearing and our mobility because that's the general aging process. So we want to make the world accessible. It just makes good business sense to do it, and it makes good sense because it's good service.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. And now, folks, I thought I'd end the show on something of a high note. The work St. Clair College is doing in their EA program to educate these students about disability issues and what can be done. Here to help me with that is student Samantha Johnson. So, what has the program taught you so far about disability and accessibility?
Well, Cam, the EA program is designed to not only prepare us to work with students with exceptionalities and disabilities in the elementary and high school level, but it's also taught us a lot of history about where Ontario stood as far as being able to provide assistance and programs within the schools for these children. For example, there is a bill called Bill 82 that was released in Ontario. It was actually a legislation that no longer made it optional. So because of Bill 82, schools were no longer given the option on whether or not they can choose to accept a student with an exceptionality into their classroom. It was now required that all school boards provided programs to assist these children.
Why do you think this is an important thing to have in place for the school system?
Well, there's many kids with exceptionalities, not necessarily physical disabilities, but they may be having trouble with learning the material taught in the classroom, and therefore they do need someone who's able to work one-on-one with them, like an EA, aside from what the teacher's doing within the classroom, and help them achieve certain individual learning goals.
Thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome.
It's really great of Samantha to come in and talk a little bit about the program. I can't stress enough the importance of educating people about disability issues. Fact is, the school system really does need to take this on more and more. Because for young people who are the future leaders of the world, to be around people with disabilities as they're learning, as they're evolving, means they're going to have a better understanding that it's just a part of life. Maybe an important part, but it is not the end-all, be-all of who a person is. Fact is, we all need supports. We all need someone to stand by us at one time or another. It's just a question of when and where that happens. But I maintain that any person, regardless of disability, background, anything, they all have the potential to achieve. Look at Stephen Hawking as an example. People underestimated him for quite a long time, till some doctors finally said, "We can do something. Why don't we try? Why don't we make the effort?" It's always worth seeing if something can be achieved before you write it off as impossible. It's not always easy to find the right solution, but I maintain it's always possible to take the next step. Say, today we made this improvement. What can we do tomorrow? The day after? They're actually working on implementing a policy to ensure that all teachers have at least some grounding in disabilities, some understanding. I mean, when a student comes into a classroom, it is the responsibility of the professional to be able to recognize what may be the situation. It may be, it may not be, but recognizing what could be the case can allow them to develop a curriculum that works for everybody, to provide an opportunity to make the learning environment possible for all. Not necessarily easy for all, but having the opportunities is the first step, saying, this is what we can do to help you succeed. If you choose to succeed, great, you can build for the future. But having that is the key. It's the foundation of all these things. The right tools, the right opportunities, the right education. And it begins with a firm understanding that people are just people. We all have things that make us special, that make us unique. But building from that, we can recognize that we all do have abilities, capabilities, things we can and will accomplish if given the right tools. And for a teacher, they play an incredibly critical role in the life of a young person. Years and years later, I can still remember the teachers who were there to support me in my own recovery. And these were a great bunch of people. They went above and beyond. But to them, it just came naturally, I think. The recognition that someone with a disability should be just given the same consideration, same respect. And as we grow as a society, it's especially important never to rest on our laurels, never to say, we've educated enough people or we've put enough policies in place. It's to make sure that this education is top quality, these policies really are matching up to our ideals. Having the foundation is fine. The question then becomes, what are we going to build on it? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.